Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Well, again, welcome to Circles of Change, and you folks know who listen to our show frequently that I have quite a broad and diverse cross-section of guests, but there's none that come closer to my heart more than those from the technology space, particularly fellow car guys. So it's a pleasure to have Ken Baker here on the line. Ken, how are you today?
I'm great, C. How are you?
Terrific, exactly. Well, and I'll be very transparent to our listeners. Ken and I have known each other for considerable number of years when, frankly,
yeah,
I wore knee socks to work as a college intern, in fact, at General Motors. So let me fill in the gaps here. Ken is president and CEO and founder of Tech Broker, which is a firm that brokers the identification, qualification, and acquisition of technology that provides solutions to meet both commercial and financial needs. Ken is on a mission to, in other words, connect the dots by providing mechanisms to accelerate the flow of technology from entrepreneurial, university, national, and defense laboratories, indeed into meaningful commercial applications. A native of Michigan and trained as a mechanical engineer, Ken, as I said, is a true car guy through and through, with career hallmarks from over 30 years with General Motors, where he was ultimately the program manager for the electric vehicles prior to becoming vice president of research and development, and then VP and general manager for their distributed energy business unit. Upon retiring from GM, Ken joined Energy Conversions Devices as vice chairman, restructuring and transforming four of their six lines of businesses towards commercialization. So for our listeners, an ultimate change agent indeed. For the next 8 years, he served as president and CEO of Alterum, one of our nation's leading nonprofit research institutes based in Ann Arbor, recognized for advanced informatics, decision support applied to national defense, healthcare, homeland security, and the environment. Ken holds several board seats in the technology transfer area, specific now to alternative energy, hybrid vehicles and related devices, plus total integrated systems. Father of three adult children, an avid golfer, outdoor sportsman, and of course a car restorer, Ken is passionate about crafting value amidst new business development and the acceleration of innovation. And as a leader, he has long stood for high-performance teams with aligned, clear, and compelling visions. So, Ken, a real pleasure to welcome you here on Circles of Change.
Well, it's a pleasure to be with you, Zara, and it's an exciting time and exciting topics, and I appreciate you inviting me to join you.
Absolutely. Well, you know, one thing I know, Ken, for a long, long time, you've been one that stood strong by the importance and criticality of innovation as a really a backbone for how not just companies can move forward, but really nations and even societies in general. Why don't you open up with some remarks in that regard first?
You know, I believe very strongly that innovation really is the backbone of sustainability for, and probably the only engine for, economic growth, whether it be our North American economy or our company or developing countries. And, you know, we've typically had strength in our commercial sector, strength in our universities, certainly our national labs, on doing outstanding basic research. But the challenge has been, how do you convert that basic research into commercial success? And, you know, that's been a challenge for the country and a challenge for companies. Interestingly, though, I think the U.S. economic environment was a bit surprised, as some of the developing countries, the Far East in particular, were able to convert technology into commercial opportunities very quickly. And it kind of opened our eyes that the world is, in fact, flat. The world is, in fact, very competitive. And now for us to have growth, we need to develop innovative products and manufacturing processes that can be easily duplicated that can't be easily duplicated without low-cost labor. So, you know, we need to be competitive with technology. We need to be competitive with innovation if we want to continue to grow the lifestyle that we enjoy here.
You know, in some regards, Ken, aren't you really staking out the challenge that in some regards we need to step back to our fundamental and our strongest roots from that which was at the core of our country so many centuries ago.
Well, you know, we've long been recognized for our quote unquote Yankee ingenuity, and you know, that's really taking sound and solid technology and understanding, and then applying it to commercial success and opportunity. And you know, I think that's you're exactly right. But the way to do that, I think, is to look at it from the commercial opportunity customer side, in addition to looking at the issue from the technology side. Traditionally, research and technology tries to move into the commercial sector from the technology base. What I do with Tech Broker is I look at it more from the commercial side, more from the customer side, more from the value creation side, and say, as an example in General Motors Research, if we could eliminate crashes and people did not die in automobiles, wouldn't that be wonderful? Yes, then what kinds of technologies should we be considering and prioritizing in our basic research agenda to achieve that? And in that particular situation, we transformed our research agenda from crashworthiness, being able to accommodate crashes and having the customers,
not getting injured,
to actually avoiding collisions. And now you're beginning to see that technology with radar braking and other things coming into the automobile to eliminate crashes. So, you know, starting with the vision of where the customer is or where the opportunity could be, and then aligning and driving your research power is really where I think the opportunity lies for the U.S.
And also with this idea, though, then of having processes that allow a robust development of that technology, right, and converting it to a real sound product application.
Absolutely. A good example, I think, of that is when we did the EV1.
Which is the electric vehicle, for those who might not know the code.
GM electric vehicle, excuse me. I'm still proud of the fact that it's the most energy-efficient production vehicle that's ever been built, which, frankly, was unconventional wisdom at the time. Most people were looking at focusing the development on the battery, and we focused more on making the vehicle very efficient, and because that's what we knew, that's what we understood in General Motors, and also we knew battery technology would change. So as a better battery came along, our car would still be the superior product. But what we did in addition to that is we established the United States Advanced Battery Consortium, which very surprisingly and uniquely brought GM, Ford, and Chrysler together with the United States government on a collaborative set of research agendas that were driven by what do we need out of an advanced battery to be successful in battery, electric, or hybrid vehicles. And then we worked with the government on that agenda, and ironically, almost 15 years ago, we identified lithium ion as the most promising long-term battery, which today is the battery of choice in electric vehicles and hybrid vehicles today. But here again, it's setting a long-term vision, aligning a research agenda, bringing together power so that you've got the strength to deliver on a very challenging but compelling agenda, and then staying the course to get the results.
Well, I think the other piece of it you describe in the case of the EV1 is to recognize that you were engineering all the way through to manufacturing, marketing, and, of course, ultimately wanting to service a total system, and knowing full well that many of the components would have a different life in that whole technology evolution process, like you said, with the batteries.
Mm-hmm. Well, in many cases, disruptive technologies also require disruptive business models to be successful. And I think that's a lesson for EV manufacturers today that, you know, we need to celebrate the opportunities of an EV. Don't just try to make it another internal combustion engine vehicle with less range. It's a new form of mobility and luxury and values, and you know, the opportunities afforded by an electric vehicle, both in technology but in the business model itself and the relationship with the customer, the values that you offer the customer. A good example is current electric vehicles also can be programmed by your PDA, your cell phone. Mm-hmm. Disruptive approach to sit at your desk and be sure that your car is preheated or pre-cooled before you go get in it. A unique opportunity and a unique value.
Well, yeah, and like you say, that's something, that type of a feature, provided you have been customer-driven, like you say, or have that customer pull, those are the kind of new ideas that could come to the fore.
Yeah. I mean, it's really turning the egg over and realizing that you've got a disruptive new form of mobility. How can you capitalize on it? A good example that I think was really interesting is when we demonstrated the EV1 at the Detroit Auto Show several years ago. We uniquely set up a track and drove the car around inside, and it was quite comical because people came up and said, oh, isn't that interesting that the vehicle's driving around inside? But they didn't realize it is driving around inside because
right.
It can. And we actually had to put a sign up, notice that this vehicle can drive inside because it's zero emissions.
That's exactly right. Well, you know, this whole concept of hybrid and electric vehicles, though, Ken, I mean, one of the biggest things people are fraught with in their mind is this whole issue of range. Well, I need something that can go farther than this. So this whole range mentality, I know you'd like to take that one on.
Well, you know, I think that a lot of the range concern has been self-generated by the manufacturers. My experience is many customers today don't really know how far they go on a daily basis, therefore what their range requirement is, but they don't want to be interrupted in their daily travels. They don't want to be stranded. And because they don't know what the range is, they suffer from what I refer to as range anxiety.
I love it, yeah.
And the anxiety of whether the vehicle is going to satisfy their needs or not is really the challenge. And then the second part of that is the useful range of an electric vehicle is a real unknown for many people as well, because, again, remember, using air conditioning or listening to your Bose stereo or other things, turning on the heater, all affect the useful range of the vehicle. You can solve that like General Motors did with their extended range vehicle with a hybrid generator that kicks in after 40 miles of battery transportation, targeting the market to be sure that you understand the useful range requirements and then selecting customers that benefit from that,
mm-hmm.
and or just looking at hybrids. You know, as I say, we're probably never going to see a full battery electric Suburban towing the Airstream cross country. There's still going to be internal combustion engines. There's still going to be hybrid economic or fuel efficiency improvement packages, and there can very well be some battery electric vehicles. But the nice thing about a battery electric or an electric vehicle is it creates energy options that we don't have today.
Absolutely.
We're basically addicted to a monopoly.
Mm-hmm. Right.
With gasoline, and the battery or an electric vehicle offers you many different forms of generation, an existing infrastructure and distribution system to benefit from it, and it gives us options. It gives us economic options and technology options that we wouldn't otherwise have.
Or, you know, as you had said earlier, it also is a way to really cause disruption in all those bright neurons of capable scientists and engineers to suddenly realize that there's all sorts of other tangential technologies and possibilities to commercialize them. Well, I know, Ken, your work, of course, isn't just automobile or vehicle-centric, that also you've had a lot of experience with the different technologies in energy. And also, you know, I know you have very strong feelings about really this being a whole new frontier and a national opportunity, if not a required agenda, correct?
Oh, I think it's a required agenda, and it's even more so as we see what's happening, unfortunately, with our friends and allies in Japan, with the earthquake, tsunami, and the resulting nuclear issues. But the whole new energy arena, when you look at it on a macro scale, globally, and the new opportunities that come from that, I mean, we fundamentally have to reduce our dependence on foreign oil as a country in the U.S. We need to increase our energy budget by probably a factor of 10 when you think about emerging countries. I mean, just look at China and the amount of energy requirement that they're going to bring online on a global basis, and hence the opportunity. And then when you think about mobility, mm-hmm. we're at a transition point in mobility as to what the base configuration will be. Will it be an ongoing internal combustion engine, or will it be an electric or hybrid derivative? Because here again, only about 12% of the world's population have vehicles today, and everyone wants more mobility. So when you look at, you know, significant upsides in demand and opportunity and the technical challenges, that just, to me, that creates an incredible focal point for the bright researchers and scientists and entrepreneurs, frankly, of the United States or the world. And, you know, it's just a melting pot of opportunity to really hit some very important social and economic opportunities.
Yeah, that they all absolutely overlap. So therein lies, of course, you're starting your business now of the tech broker. What does that look like, and how has it been going so far for you?
Well, it's a very interesting model, as I said early on. It's my experience is from the commercial side. My background is commercial R&D and customer-oriented vision and opportunity. And therefore, tech broker recognized that for commercial companies to be successful going forward, they needed innovation. But almost paradoxically, it was something that was very hard to afford in challenging global markets. Mm-hmm. It's typically funded with profit.
Right, exactly. And, that they may not have yet because they're a startup.
Yeah, so now you've got the commercial need and demand, but their inability to fund it directly, but that created the opportunity for tech broker to then look to the universities and the national labs and the entrepreneurs that are creating wonderful new technology to bridge that gap from basic research to commercial opportunity. But it's interesting because the research community tends to speak in technical problem-solving terms, and the commercial sector envisions customer-driven solutions, and it's almost like they speak two different languages. So to some extent, my business has been, how do you broker, how do you create a communication bond
Absolutely.
That allows the two to accelerate to a commercial success?
Well, and actually what you've encountered, obviously, is everyone thinks they're speaking the same language, but they're not. They're speaking
yeah.
dialects that are ever so subtle. And also, if we look at the nature of the type of people that are attracted to careers or enterprises, as you so described, they have a whole different set of predictive behaviors, right? So how fun it must be for you to be sitting in the nexus of that, but still looking for ways to create those bridges.
Well, actually, I've been doing some work recently with some students at ASU that are Arizona State that are looking at developing some new technology businesses. And their technology roadmap is, in fact, a technology roadmap where it outlines what they're going to research next. And what I've been trying to help them with is to realize that there's an early adoption set of market opportunities, some transitional market opportunities, and some volume market opportunities that all have different characteristics of scale and volume and cost. And so many of the agendas and technology roadmaps don't even consider
exactly.
You need lower cost if you want higher volume.
That's indeed. Well, that's where the years of experience can come to bear to guiding the future. Ken Baker from Technology Broker here in Arizona, real pleasure. Thanks very much for joining us here on Circles of Change.
Well, thank you, Zara, for having me, and it's a wonderful opportunity to chat with you again.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Change is chaotic, that is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsengroup.com or toll-free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, 877-544-2580.